Hi, everyone, and welcome to End of Life University podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I want to thank you for joining me today and listening in on this podcast. It means a lot to me to know that people actually do listen to these little broadcasts that I put out there, since I spend quite a lot of time on them, and I'm happy to know that it's a benefit to some of you and that you appreciate this work that I'm doing. Today is June 6th, 2016, and you're listening to episode number 41, and I'll be talking with you about how to create sacred space in the midst of chaos. But first, I just wanted to let you know that these podcast episodes are not free to create. While they're free to listen to, they're not free to create. There is quite a bit of expense involved in the platform I use for recording and producing and broadcasting the episodes. Also, maintaining websites and an email server so that I can notify people when episodes come out. And so for that reason, I have created a donation page at patreon.com, and the website for that is patreon.com/EOLU. If you are inclined to want to donate anything, you can go to that page to enter your donation, and I'm asking for just $1 or $2 a month in support, which will help defray the costs of creating this podcast. And my featured patron for this week is Leslie Robertson. And thank you so much, Leslie, for stepping up to support End of Life University. I really appreciate that. Leslie, just to let you know a little bit about her, she's creating a project to train women 40 to 60 plus who can't find work after the recession. She's training them to become end of life workers. And so I think that's just fabulous. I'm so excited about that, Leslie, and totally supportive of the work that you're doing. And she invited me to give her email address if anyone out there is interested in collaborating with her or just networking with her. And so Leslie's email address, listen carefully. You'll have to write this down probably. I'll read it off. LSLERBRTSON@yahoo.com. So thanks again, Leslie, for being my supporter on Patreon. I really appreciate that. And if anyone else wants to go to patreon.com/EOLU and become a patron, I will read your name and make a little announcement about the work that you're doing in a future episode. You'll receive the recordings, MP3 recordings, of the top 10 interviews from End of Life University over the past couple of years, and that includes interviews with people like Ira Byock, Stephen Jenkinson, John Underwood from Death Cafe. Those are all included. They're the top 10 interviews that I've done. So you'll receive those recordings as a gift from me. From time to time, you'll receive little surprise gifts that you're not expecting that I'll send out to you. And in fact, I have something coming next week for supporters that I won't spoil the surprise by saying what that is, but it will be going out next week to my Patreon supporters. And also, once we reach the first milestone, which is $50 a month of support, and we're about halfway there right now, I'll be starting a monthly hangout group called Hospice Happy Hour. And that will just be a time when we'll get together and chat about end of life issues, maybe a Q&A session, support session, whatever people need. We'll be doing that once a month as soon as we reach the goal of $50 a month. So one more time, that's Patreon, patreon.com/EOLU. You'll find my page there. And I really appreciate it. Thank you again to all of the supporters out there who stepped up to make donations for this podcast and also for the End of Life University interview series. So if you're listening to the podcast and you're not familiar with the interview series, I'll mention that to you as well. You can go to eoluniversity.com and find out about my interview series. I do 2 interviews a month with experts in the end of life. Some of the older interviews from the archives have been posted here in this podcast. I share them as part of the podcast from time to time, usually at least 1 interview a month or so. But when you sign up for EOL University, you'll receive notification each time a new interview is posted, and you'll be able to listen to those online and listen to replays for 4 days after the broadcast. So I encourage you to go to eoluniversity.com as well and sign up if you're not already a member so that you can tune in to those interviews. They've been really fascinating, and I've learned so much. I can honestly say much of what I now know about what's available for the end of life comes from doing these interviews and meeting fascinating people who have taught me a lot. For example, Kate Kalanick from the Green Burial Council taught me all about green burial. Esmeralda Kent, who makes shrouds for green burial, I was really fascinated to learn from her. And many more interviews. So sign up for EOL University and start tuning in to those interviews. I think you'll really enjoy those. And again, thanks for being here today. For this talk, which I have titled Creating Sacred Space in the Midst of Chaos. The reason this subject came up today is because I was recently asked to do a presentation similar to this for a group of hospice nurses. And as I'm putting that talk together, I suddenly had this like powerful inspiration that I need to make this a podcast, and I need to do it right now and broadcast it immediately. So sometimes I get guidance like that, and I don't know why, but I can only assume maybe someone will listen to it who needs to hear it. So I'm putting this out there right now simply because I have this compelling inspiration within to do this as a podcast and to talk about this information with you. So the situation that I was told about for a certain group of hospice nurses is that they work in an inpatient hospice unit, and that what they're dealing with is a great deal of patients who are being admitted at the very, very end of life. And we're talking about patients with less than 3 days to live who are being admitted to their inpatient unit. So there's a very rapid turnaround time for patients. They're coming in and out in a very short time frame, which creates a lot of stress for the staff at the inpatient unit, doing all the work of an admission for someone who's going to die sometimes 24 hours later. So as I looked at that, and the purpose of this talk is to help them figure out how to cope with this very stressful situation that they're in. And I was looking up some statistics, and this came from a report by the Centers for Disease Control, but it was part of an article that was posted in JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, that reported that while in this last decade, twice as many patients are being referred to hospice from hospitals at the end of life, which is in some ways a big breakthrough because hospitals are getting the message that patients need to be involved in hospice care at the end of life. But the problem is 30% of those patients receive 3 days or less of hospice care. That means hospitals are recognizing that it's important to send patients to hospice care, but they're sending them far too late. They're engaging hospice care only at the very end, probably when most of these patients are already actively dying. And so, you know, as you look at that situation and think about how did we get here to this place, and often as I, in my work here, trying to be a thought leader in end-of-life issues, I think it's very important that we always ask that question, how did we get here? How did this situation arise where we have hospital staff, we have ICU staff, doctors, hospital administrators, recognizing a greater need for hospice care for patients, but not understanding that the whole point of hospice and palliative care is to get patients admitted much, much earlier during the course of terminal illness so that they can receive care over time and their family can receive all the benefits that the type of care we offer to them, it makes available to them. So how is it that they have failed to perceive that these referrals and transfers and admissions need to be made much earlier in the course of the disease? And for me, the obvious and kind of cynical conclusion I've come to is that in many ways, this is more of a business decision to ship patients out to hospice at the very end of life than it is a decision of the heart or a decision based on what is best for the patient. And so, yes, that conclusion is cynical on my part. And but I think it is a reality that we're dealing with here, that medical care, healthcare is a business in our country, and hospice care itself has also become a business. So that's a reality that we all have to face, and we're working in the midst of a business run by corporations that have the bottom line in mind and have sometimes a board of directors or shareholders or investors even to be responsible to. And yet we're doing sacred work in caring for the dying in the midst of a business setting. So I just wanted to lay that out as kind of this is the milieu in which this type of care is being offered. There's definitely a business mindset about how this care is taking place, and we can't deny that. And we can't soft pedal it either. The business aspect of healthcare and of dying is a reality right now that probably won't be changed very quickly. So we have to figure out how to come to terms with it and how we can survive within that situation. And so to go beyond how we got there, the other reason for this type of situation when patients are getting admitted to hospice at the very, very end of life is partly also because of a lack of preparation in advance by patients and families, not in every case, but in some cases, we know that to be sure. We still know that only about 30% of Americans have advanced directives that instruct healthcare providers about the type of care they'd like to receive at the end of life. So there's a lack of planning, a lack of forethought, a lack of conversations happening earlier in the course of disease. And in that case, decisions are made on the fly at the last minute in the midst of a crisis. And that's how patients end up, sometimes, as I said, maybe already actively dying and getting yanked from the ICU, taken by ambulance to an inpatient hospice where the hospice staff is asked to care for them as they are dying. So this is without a doubt a very challenging situation and very challenging for the care providers who are being asked to take care of patient after patient in this setting, being asked to admit one person after another. Sometimes, you know, I'm sure there are numerous admissions in one day and numerous deaths in the same day. And so this quick turnaround time doesn't give the hospice staff enough time to really gain the benefits that they might gain, the gratification of caring for a patient at the end of life and of connecting with the family and getting to know them and the deeper interactions they might have, even the opportunity to know the patient, because a patient admitted in the last 3 days is likely to be in that active dying state and not available for a relationship with the hospice staff. And so that relationship, the connection with patient and family, watching the gradual transition through the dying process, that's where much of the gratification comes in the end of life work that we do. And when that's taken away and the hospice staff don't don't receive that kind of feedback and filling up again of gratification from the relationships that they're able to establish in hospice. How do we keep doing that work? And I wanted to mention a couple of ideas that come to my mind. And I think the biggest risk of creating a business around death and dying is a loss of meaning in the process. Because I think that the business mindset overlooks the importance of meaning and the deeper aspects of meaning of dying. The business aspect is looking at costs and numbers and figures and demanding a cost-effective approach to the dying process rather than demanding a compassionate, comfortable, loving end of life for the patient involved. So it's up to the staff to provide the compassion and the care and the love that is needed by the patient, also to provide the meaning for that patient and their family when they walk into a facility in the last few days of life. And I will share with you some tips that I have for how to help maintain that sacred space that's present, needs to be present, that we want to be present at the time of dying, and some suggestions for what hospice staff members can do to keep themselves going in these deeply challenging situations with patients. So I decided to title it Creating Sacred Space because we need to remember that dying itself is a sacred process. There's something very holy about the process of dying. And dying remains sacred regardless of where it takes place, regardless of the conditions and the situations, and that it's occurring in. So dying retains its sacredness, whether it's in the ICU or in an inpatient hospice or at home or even for a person on the street. The dying process itself is a sacred process because it's a reuniting, this is from my perspective, a reuniting of the soul aspect of a person with the greater spiritual aspects of the universe, and that in itself is sacred. So the space and the place and the situation in which dying occurs doesn't determine whether or not it's sacred. The sacredness comes with the act of dying, but we can help create a sacred atmosphere for the person who's dying and for their family with sometimes just a few changes in the physical environment. And that would be like keeping the room quiet, keeping the lights soft, minimizing interventions with the patient in order to help augment the sacredness of that time. But also we can help foster sacredness simply by our own presence with the dying patient and their family. And that requires a certain mindset on our parts. So I think we have to remember that we're not responsible for making the dying itself sacred. It's already sacred. Our place is to honor the sacredness of the death that's taking place by being present and bringing our own calmness and compassion into the situation. So those are two things, calmness and compassion. I'm going to talk about how do you generate those when you're exhausted and when you're tired and stressed and you're overworked and you've had too many admissions and too many patients die that you just barely got settled in their room. And how do you maintain calmness and compassion in the midst of a chaotic environment in which you're working? So once again, remind yourself that you are not responsible for making the dying itself sacred. Dying itself is a sacred process. All that you're asked to do is to be present during that transition in a way that enhances the sacredness of what's taking place. And that involves how you care for yourself and how you view the work that you're doing. So we'll start out with a little bit about mindset, and I'll tell you a little story that I heard once, which was a story of three men who were building a church. They were all bricklayers. And the first man was slapping bricks together with a lot of resentment. And they said, well, so what is it that you're doing here, sir? And he responded, well, can't you see? Isn't it obvious? I'm stacking up bricks. That's my job. The second man, when they said, what is it that you're doing here? He said, well, I'm helping to build this brick wall so that I can earn money to take care of my family. And the third man, when asked what he was doing, said, I'm building a cathedral. So if you look at the attitudes of those three men, all of whom had the same job, all who were working on the very same project, the man who viewed it simply as a job and a job that he didn't even like very much was not happy with the work and not fed or nurtured by the work that he was doing, because his mindset was, I'm stuck here and I don't like this work and I'm forced to do it. The second man at least found meaning in the work because it was an income and something he could use to support his family. So that attitude at least helped him cope with the stress of the work because there was something to be gained from the work. He would get a paycheck at the end of the work that he could take home. And that's a little better attitude. At least there's something positive to gain from the work, but the income has nothing to do with the work itself. So the work itself still might seem boring or tedious or a terrible task, but at least there's something to gain from it, which is a paycheck to take home. But the third man viewed his work as something magnificent and sacred and holy. He was building a cathedral. And for this man to be part of the work of constructing a cathedral was a privilege. And it was a beautiful opportunity for him to get to do the work, to get to be the mason who piled the bricks together to make the foundation for this cathedral. So for this man to go to work every day and to have this job was somewhat of a miracle, and he saw himself as fortunate that he got to be part of this process of building a cathedral. So I'm telling that little story for the kind of the obvious reason of exploring the idea that our own mindset about the work we're doing contributes a lot to how we bear up under the stresses of the work, because frankly, it's often unglamorous work that we do in hospice. It's often very stressful. It's often difficult. Often the actual work itself it's tedious, it's painful, it's emotionally exhausting. But if we view the work as something we're stuck with that we have to do and we don't have a choice right now, we're likely to be pretty miserable much of the time. If we view it as a means to get a paycheck to support our family, we at least have a way of balancing out some of the pain and the difficulty of work, because there's something good that we can gain from the work. But if we can view our work as participating in a sacred process and having the privilege of being part of that process that not everyone gets to take part in, not everyone gets to do this work or has this opportunity, when we can view our hospice work as this sacred moment and this incredible, miraculous opportunity to witness something that not everyone can be part of, then we can go to work each day at least with the mindset that this is good work that I'm doing. This is sacred work, and this is a privilege for me to get to be here no matter how hard it is. Yes, the work is still hard. It's still going to be hard and painful and stressful and challenging every single day. But having a higher mindset about the work that I'm participating in a sacred process here can help you cope and get through the difficulties of the day. Now, not all of us may be capable of having that mindset in the first place, but I wanted to offer that to you if that resonates with you. It might help if you have a new way of looking at your job every day, and defining what your job is and what is this work that you do every day. So that was my first little talk about mindset. The mindset you take to work with you when you go to work is really important for how you view what happens during the day. And next, I want to remind you again, as I said before, you do not have to create the sacredness that surrounds the dying. You simply participate in it. You also don't have to generate the compassion that you want the patient to experience. You can actually view yourselves as a channel for compassion to come through you. You don't have to figure out how to create compassion through your own tired body, through your own worn out heart and emotions, but view yourself as a channel for compassion and love to flow through to the patient. So you don't have to even decide what the patient and the family might need from you. Do they need me to say something special? Do they need me to show them love? You don't have to necessarily think that through with your mind. You can focus instead on being an open channel and trusting that whatever this family and patient needs will come through me. It will come through me and flow to them if I keep myself in an open state of mind. So the mindset of that my work is a privilege and I get to be here as a participant in this sacred process, that helps you stay open in the moment and helps you become a more open channel for love to flow through you, love and compassion and kindness toward the people that you're working with and serving in your work. And we'll talk a little bit more about how you keep yourself in that open state. But I just want to remind you to think of yourself as a channel. You're not struggling within you, like, how can I make myself feel love for these people? Only, how can I be a better channel of love that wants to flow through me to these people? And so in that situation, when you're thinking of yourself as an open channel, your job then becomes keeping yourself open as much as possible. And so that's a little bit different task. You can be tired and still be open. You can be even burned out and still be open. You can be stressed. You can be upset with someone, something that happened at work, but still be open to be a channel. So the way that you become the best possible channel that you can be is to take care of yourself. And sometimes those of us who get involved in really nurturing, caregiving occupations like hospice are not the best at taking care of ourselves. And that's one of the ways that we get in trouble. We tend to deplete ourselves and we overlook our own needs because our concern is so much about the needs for others. So it's important to emphasize, even though some of these self-care tips that I'll give you seem really obvious, like everyone should know this, why I'm mentioning them is so that you remember how important it is that you do things intentionally and purposely to care for yourself. That's what allows you to be more open and to be a better channel so that compassion and love can flow through you for the patients that you're working with. So I'll share some of I kind of have body, mind, spirit tips for you. And as I said, some of these are very obvious things you already know. You just may not be doing them for yourself. And so if we look at self-care for the body, regular exercise is important for each of us, doing a little walking every day, some stretching, getting adequate sleep at night, which may be hard when we're stressed out. Sometimes that stress interferes with sleep. So it's important that you develop good sleep habits, go to bed early enough at night, limit caffeine and alcohol in the evenings, even limit TV and computer an hour before bed because the blue light from those electronics can interfere with your sleep at night. maybe try a chamomile tea, a relaxing bath. You can rub warm sesame oil on your feet just to help you relax. Create your own bedtime ritual to help you get better sleep at night. Also make sure you're drinking enough fluids every day and staying hydrated. And make sure you get enough fruits and vegetables in your diet. And so I'll just let you know my very favorite way to get fruits and vegetables is in a green smoothie, which I make every morning and drink a green smoothie. And it's made with spinach, cucumbers, celery, avocado, parsley, apple, and banana. And it tastes delicious. It's very sweet. It's green, though. The color is a little disturbing, but delicious. And after drinking that, I know I've really had all of my fruits and vegetables for the day. So I get fiber and I get all the vitamins and minerals I need for the day. So even if I'm in a really busy situation and I'm not going to be able to eat a healthy meal, I already know I've gotten the nutrients I need for the day. So if I have to eat something not so healthy later on in the day, it won't matter that much because I've already taken care of it at breakfast. That's just my one of my favorite tips is to try a green smoothie. I love it. It's one of the best things I've ever done, and I've been drinking them for about a year and a half now every single day. So we'll move on to some mental and emotional self-care practices, and these are things just to kind of help you with that mindset and to help you process the emotions that that sometimes can get overwhelming when we're dealing with hospice work and constantly facing death and dying of our patients and constantly working with families who are grieving and upset and in a crisis state. So one of the tips is to start a journal and do a little bit of journaling each day. And I do mine in the morning, but I think it's also a great practice to journal a little at nighttime before you go to bed. Sometimes that helps you just empty your mind of whatever is circulating around from the day before you go to bed. You can just write it down quickly in your journal before you go to sleep at night. It's a great way to process your emotions and your experiences during the day, especially if you don't necessarily have time to talk to someone else about what's going on. Your journal becomes your friend that you can confide in and share things with each day. So I definitely recommend journaling. One of my other favorite tips is to just use deep breathing exercises, the simplest thing you can imagine that you can do anywhere in any time or place, taking three long, slow, deep breaths. And to begin with, you might want to breathe in for a count of five and out for a count of six. Just make sure you breathe out at least one count longer than you breathe in, because a prolonged exhalation helps activate the parasympathetic nervous system, which helps your body become more relaxed. So you can gradually train yourself to breathe more deeply all the time by intentionally working on some deep breathing. So I would say take three slow deep breaths three times during the day. So maybe when you get up in the morning, sometime in the middle of the day, and before you go to bed at night. And by focusing on it and the feeling, what it feels like to inhale deeply and fill your lungs fully, you'll be training yourself to more easily and more naturally and reflexively take deeper breaths. One of the reasons this is important is that sometimes when we're under a lot of stress and in a tense, chaotic environment, we start breathing rapidly and shallowly. And that leads to a little more activation of our sympathetic nervous system, more adrenaline. It kind of increases the feeling of stress and anxiety in the body. So it keeps us in this sort of hyper state all day long. And just consciously deep breathing can pull us back out of that state into a state of more relaxation. So when I was mentioning that one of the ways we help enhance sacred space for our patients is to create an atmosphere of calmness, we add to the calmness around the patient by being calm ourselves. And sometimes it's hard to do when you're running around, rushing, trying to get everything done, and you enter a patient's room and you already feel yourself, your heart's racing, you're breathing fast, you walk in the room bringing in tension and anxiety with you. So a good practice is before you enter a patient's room, stop at the doorway and take one deep breath, just one long, slow inhalation, long, slow exhalation, and that will immediately make you calmer and put you into a calmer state and slow you down so that you can walk into the room and bring calmness into the room with you as you enter and not be creating a disturbing sort of energy in that room. So deep breathing, it's an incredible tool that you can use anywhere, anytime to help you relax and calm down. It's great if you're in pain to also use some deep breathing. And if you're working with a patient who's in pain or a family member who's really anxious and starting to lose control, you can help them get control by encouraging them to breathe with you. So you model long, slow inhalation and exhalation and ask them to breathe with you. And if they're breathing very rapidly, you start breathing at their pace and then take longer and longer inhalations and exhalations, which helps slow them down. So that can be an excellent way to bring more calmness and also to help with pain with a patient or family member that you're working with. And this works for anyone, so I'm not saying you have to be a hospice worker of some type in order to use deep breathing. It's something all of us should learn as a skill, is to just to utilize the deep breathing as a practice that can help us stay calm in times of tension. So there's one other little tool I'll share with you that can help with calmness and calming down, and it's hand acupressure. So I'm going to describe these three points that you can use. And with acupressure, you rub these specific acupressure points on the hand, and they help alleviate nausea and anxiety. And so the first one is in the center of the palm of the hand, and you use the thumb of the opposite hand, press gently on the center of the palm of the other hand, and then massage, rotate your thumb in a clockwise direction and just gently massage the center of the palm, and do that for 30 seconds or so. And that can help bring about a sense of calmness and peace. So the center of the palm is the first to use. And that's actually sometimes the simplest one. If you're working with someone who's upset and anxious, you can actually hold their hand and just place your thumb in the palm of their hand as you're holding their hand and put slight pressure in the center. You don't have to massage or move your thumb, but just hold it and put pressure in the center of the palm of their hand, and you can help them experience more calmness and less anxiety in that moment. So the two other acupressure points on the hand, one is outside the center of the palm on the little finger side of the hand. So it's the edge of the hand, the outside edge of the hand below the little finger. There's another acupressure point there. And then there's also one in the center of the web space in between the thumb and the index finger. So go to that web space and you can just put pressure there with your thumb or a finger of the other hand. That's another place you can use acupressure to help improve calmness. So those are simple little tips that you can use, deep breathing and then the hand acupressure, to help yourself just calm down a little bit and feel less anxious and less stressed in the midst of the job. So as I was saying, you can create this atmosphere of calmness around you by helping yourself stay less stressed and calm. That also helps you open, as I was saying, to be a better channel for the compassion that that can come through you in the moment. Some other practices you can use when you're away from work at home are yoga and mindfulness meditation. Those are great things to cultivate that can help you slow your thoughts down when they're racing and help you also get into a calmer state. So we'll move on to some spiritual practices, and I find that having some sort of a little spiritual toolkit that you can use can be really helpful, especially as we were talking about when we're struggling to find meaning in the midst of the business of death and dying, when we're working in a business that sometimes offends us or hurts us or doesn't really support and promote the meaning that we'd like to see there. We have to bring meaning with us. We have to bring our own meaning to the work that we do. And that's one reason I told the story about remember that you're participating in a sacred event. And that is a miracle, and that's an incredible blessing in your life to have that opportunity. Start with that as your mindset, and then I'll give you a few other little tools that you can also use to help enhance the sense of meaning, even when things are chaotic, even when things are hectic around you. So one more thing to mention, though, these are spiritual practices. You don't have to be a religious person to utilize them. So you don't need to be a person who attends a church or belongs to any particular religion. This is simply based on the idea of finding meaning in the dying process. And for me, that is spiritual, to finding meaning. But for you, it might be something different. So take what serves you of these practices that I recommend, whatever is comfortable for you, whatever fits with your own life purpose. So I think the first I've already mentioned, which is just finding your own meaning for why you're doing this work and reminding yourself of that and understanding what drew you to the work, what calls you about being part of this work at the end of life. Remind yourself of that each day as you go to work, to remember why you're here and why you're doing it, the deeper reasons why you're here. There's also a simple technique, and this incorporates deep breathing, but it's simply to place your hand over your heart. And as you're breathing in and out, imagine that you're drawing love into your heart. And so for me, this is where I really envision that that idea of being a channel for love. So as I breathe in, I imagine love is just pouring in through the top of my head and filling up my heart. And then as I breathe out, I imagine that love is free to move out from me to others wherever it's needed to go. So you keep your hand on your heart because it emphasizes that the heart is kind of the organ of love, and it helps you remember that you want to be a channel for love. You're not creating the love, you're simply bringing it through you. So as you breathe in, focus on the love flowing in through the top of your head and filling your heart, and breathe out and see the love radiating out from you toward others. So this is another way that you contribute to that sacred space of dying, is by being this channel, being in a state where love can freely flow through you into your heart and out again to others who need it. And that's a practice, just doing the deep breathing with your hand over your heart. That's something you might also practice other times, not just during work. But I consider it sort of an emergency tool that I have, is that sometimes when I'm in a tense situation, is just for a moment or two, put my hand over my heart and take one deep breath. And that reminds me, that usually pulls me right back into that state of knowing I need to be a calm presence and I need to be a channel for love in this situation. So I wanted to share that little technique. And then also there is the loving kindness blessing. This is one of my very favorite things that I will share with you. The loving kindness blessing, which comes from the Buddhist tradition, is may I be at peace. May my heart remain open. May I realize the beauty of my own true nature. May I be healed. May I be a source of healing for this world. And that blessing is something that I say probably every day to myself, and I also say it for others, like may you be at peace. May your heart be open. So having something in your toolkit like that blessing, it's something that helps me stay very calm and focused in the moment and remember, like, I'm here to be at peace. I'm here to bring healing and love and peace to other people. That's my intention. That's what my work is all about. And so even in the middle of a hectic day, even in the middle of chaos, I can still get to that place where I remind myself, this is my purpose and this is why I'm here. And having a blessing like this loving kindness blessing is just something simple to get your mind calmed down and quieted down and into that state. And the last thing I'll tell you is a little mnemonic that I also remember, and this is a good thing to journal about. And I call it cultivating a state of grace, the five letters of grace. G stands for gratitude. And to remember, I am grateful for all of life, including this situation I find myself in right now. The R of grace stands for release. I release all my expectations for how things should have been and accept them as they are. Next is the A of grace, which stands for awareness. I focus my attention on this present moment, meaning instead of worrying about something that happened yesterday or something that might happen tomorrow, I'm going to keep my attention right here on this moment right now. Next is the letter C for compassion. I hold myself and all others in deep love. And finally, E, which stands for equanimity. I seek the place of stillness and calm that exists within me. And what's important about that final statement is to remember that even though you are in the midst of a hectic day, to remember that deep within you, there is already this place of stillness and calm. And so all you have to do is use your mind to envision that you are there. You are in that calm state, and you can get there very quickly just by reminding yourself that that's who you are at your core. Your inner being is calm and peaceful. So when you remind yourself of that, you can get to that state fairly quickly. So that is the little mnemonic for grace, gratitude, release, awareness, compassion, and equanimity. Those five things that I wanted to remind you of. Again, those are just some spiritual tools that I like to use. It's important to have a few tools of your own, and whether you use the ones I've suggested or you already have your own or you find something that resonates with you, it's helpful when you work in such a stressful job that can be so hectic and chaotic to have something you can use in the moment that helps you get back to that place where you can participate in the sacredness of dying, regardless of how it's happening, regardless of how short the time is, regardless of how much less than ideal the circumstances seem to be, you can still participate and support the sacredness of the process. And by doing that, you will get the rewards of knowing what a difference you've made for this patient and this family. Whereas even if you provide only 24 hours of care for them, you have made the dying process be all that it can possibly be for this patient and family. You have helped it become the blessing that it should be for them in their lives, and you've been able to participate in that process and add to it. And so I'm hoping that in the midst of the chaotic work that we do, you will still be able to find deep meaning, to find gratification, to find enough rewards for yourself that you remember every day that it's a blessing to have this job. It's a blessing to do this work. So that's all I have to say today. I wanted to bring this to you. And again, I'm not sure why I felt a strong motivation to record this talk today for the podcast. And so I'm putting it out there for you, for anyone, whoever needs to hear it. I hope it's a blessing for you if you need to hear it. And I myself am honored to be in this position now of being able to share some of the things I've learned through my career and my years in work and in life. And I'm so grateful to you for sharing this time with me and stopping your busy day to take time out to listen to what I have to say. So thank you so much for being here for the End of Life University podcast. And I hope you'll join me again once a week, every Monday. Have a wonderful week this week and know that you are loved. Until the next time, goodbye.